Atelier joining us for Dirty on the 30 right now.
I'm kind of embarrassed because he's reading the text from 22997. You can text in right now. And somebody brings up Alanis Morissette on here.
Oh, my God. You get asked about that.
No, but it says on here, he's looking at it. It says, he's a jerk. Are you a jerk?
No. You know, you do that popcorn cup trick one time in a theater, and it comes back to haunt you the rest of your life.
Look, it says, I'm on Team Alanis.
Oh, my God.
Oh, really?
What?
Yeah, that's...
People
that
are still
is
hanging on to that. It's unbelievable.
So that's from 415.
She is awesome. Let me just tell you. I'll tell you a quick story, not to be downer boy here,
let me refresh everybody's memory. The song by Alanis Morissette, You Oughta Know, was allegedly written about you.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yes. Let me tell... I parted with Alanis as friends, and not to be downer boy, like I said, but when my sister Sharon was in the hospital with terminal cancer, I was in Los Angeles, and Alanis came in from Toronto, came and visited my sister and sat bedside and played guitar for her.
Oh, did she play You Want to Know for her?
Yes, she did. It was the whole...
This is about your brother!
See, we brought it back around. Oh,
wow.
We brought it all back around.
So you were recently married. Is your wife into 50 Shades of Grey?
She's not.
Billigun in China, never famous before, who cares?
I did.
But for Shawn Michaels, it's a second time, just like Flair. Sometimes life gets turned around and no one's there. According to our new arrivals, life is more than pushes and titles.
Oh, wow.
Looks like we might be Hall of Famers yet.
Yeah, if I remember, I'll put in the little like the instrumentation there at the end.
Yeah, so just cut that part out and just
put that right in.
Yeah,
sounds smooth as fuck.
I abbreviated it, but I think it still worked
talking
really
about
well.
Abbreviating it, this is, you're taking our modern wrestling news, you're fixing them into your like singing in fucking portion intro. Like,
yeah,
this might be the shortest podcast we ever fucking record because I feel like we're like halfway through it right now.
We've covered
most of everything already right now. I'm about ready to put my feet up. My work here is done.
I got Michaels and Flair. That's at least half of our rundown, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
mm-hmm.
I guess just, I covered 90s television, which is the three count. Yeah, I wrapped it up.
Just the intro. You just have to say who we are, what the show is, and then basically we'll be done.
Oh, it's Baby Oil and Blow. I'm Matt O. You are going to be... Ooh, you can be... I think you're Earthquake to my Typhoon. You are Nate Adams.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. You're just saying that because of my ever-changing arm tattoos, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pick a tattoo, buddy. Yeah. That's what you're always saying.
Well, we wrapped it up, so tune in next week when we're covering Saturday Night WCW, huh? No?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll run with this one for a little bit.
We get done with that, too, here.
I think I can knock it out.
JR's out there in a stool looking awkward.
I'm trying to put,
bunch of squash matches.
Trying to work that theme song to Growing Pains into a Saturday Night WCW.
Maybe we save it. Let's not overextend ourselves.
All right.
We've done a lot of work here already.
Yeah.
D-Generation X officially announced.
Break it down!
Is entering the WWE Hall of Fame. I say officially announced because your little brother, Davey R. Scheister, is sending me snarky DX in the Hall of Fame comments.
Yeah.
Via text message there, so I assume it's official. Did that get announced on Raw tonight? Is that what's going down?
Oh, no, they announced it during the day. ESPN announced it first.
Smart. Get that like Jonathan Coachman in over there at the ESPN.
He don't work there no more.
Do a little bit of our business for us. You know he's still got fucking ins going
on
there.
Yeah, he's still got pulled.
Coachman's got fucking fingers in all sorts of pies.
Is that rock talk for he's finger blasting women at ESPN?
Oh, no, I don't think there's many women.
Oh, okay. That's my mistake.
Men can be fingered too, Matt.
Yeah.
Men can be fingered too.
Sure. Yeah, if that girl's father taught us anything about how you can finger.
So this is the big headliner for the Hall of Fame, clearly. That's always what they announce first, to my recollection. They're banking on DX being like a... So I guess that means Taker's not going in.
Which
begs the question to me, are they going to try to have Taker wrestle again at WrestleMania this year?
He's all in, bro.
It's the last couple times, it hasn't gone well, Matt.
Well, he's there's a lot of things to talk about here. But first of all, with Taker, he's taken all mentions of WWE down from his social media.
Okay.
And he's taken his first non-WWE booking.
Since when does Undertaker have social media? I thought that was a thing.
Like, no, he does.
Taker doesn't do social media.
He does.
He's too fucking like into the character.
He's got the IGs. I think he's got a Twitters.
I knew his wife had him, and like she would sometimes post pictures of him, but I feel like this is new.
Either way, he's removed himself from WWE, and he's taken his first non-WWE signing with StarCast.
Okay, he's going to be at the fan nerd conventions now, signing shit.
Poof. I feel like...
This comes out of left field to me, man.
He's not above a payday from... those nice Jaguars peoples.
You think Undertaker chokeslams some of Joey Ryan's dick druids at Double or Nothing?
That'd be
great.
Is that
where things are going?
That'd be great.
Tombstone to some dick druids?
Tombstone a man in a penis costume?
I feel like there'd have to be some sort of horrendous, horrendous personal falling out between him and Vince McMahon in the last 6 months for him to agree to anything like that.
I'm really torn here. I've been going back and forth with it. All these guys are money-hungry assholes.
Sure, sure. And the word on the street is that The Undertaker is charging $25,000 an hour for personal appearances.
Oh.
So, like, barring this one big StarCast thing, like, who else is going to afford that?
But Vince McMahon.
And this is like, yeah, he's opened a new bookings, but, like... Only if you're backing up the fucking Brinks truck. He's not gonna go to like fucking WrestleCon in Louisville or whatever that shit goes on, and they're gonna be like, well, here's $100,000. That's not how the economics of this business work.
I'm interested to see the television deal for AEW. I think that's gonna be the deciding factor of what's just
like officially how far can they go when it comes to just signing ridiculously huge names and bring them in to do essentially nothing.
I think a lot of these guys look at how WWE botched like the Sting Taker dream match situation
and botched also everything else they've done
over
the last 15 years.
Sure. But I think these guys are good enough. Well, I don't want to say good enough, but have enough of an idea for the business to where they realize, like...
They're carnies.
Yeah. They're like, if somebody's going to put on this show, we're going to get paid really big.
I'm telling you, when there's paychecks out there, the pro wrestlers, they circle, man.
Yeah.
They circle like fucking vultures.
Once Nash realized Jericho bought a nice house, he started asking.
Start blowing him up on Instagram.
Yeah.
However, if there was anybody who seemed was set for life and was settled in what
Taker's
he was doing and didn't need to do anything else, Taker is that guy. So I'm just surprised he's even like doing fucking convention signings, because he was always so much just like, I'm the Undertaker. I protect the fact that I'm an undead zombie. I don't just show up doing normal things. Like, he hasn't been on all his buddies' podcasts, like, talking about, like, oh, back when he said that he was going to make me Undertaker, at first I was like, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't do that shit.
Yeah.
So what's going on, man? What happened with Taker?
Maybe he's joining CM Punk's MMA stable that's going to be in AEW.
That would be cool as fuck.
Oh, it's MMA superstar Mark Callison.
It would suck that Double J just came back and... did a Legends deal or whatever with WWE, because
he could pick back up that
fucking MMA Double J would have been a shoo-in for that stable.
MMA Double J was one of the best.
Well, kids, thanks for inviting me here today.
Obviously, the word has traveled real fast of my newfound love of MMA, and you know, I hope you guys, you'll never reach my level, but you're starting young, and you could aspire to come close to my level.
We're not going to be doing any karate today. We're going to be talking more submissions, more along the lines of what I've perfected, what Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle have attempted for their entire life. to gain the knowledge that I've quite frankly mastered in a matter of weeks.
DX is in the Hall of Fame.
You think that's their
Taker? There's question marks everywhere.
Do you feel like that was WWE's pussy way of inducting China?
That's absolutely WWE's pussy way of sidestepping all of the China needs to be in the Hall of Fame complaints by being like, oh, look, she's in there now. We'll mention her for 20 seconds, swing around the stage, and then.
Like, yeah, she was a train wreck, but you've got fucking some real losers in that Hall of Fame already. You got Trump in there. Like, you got some people in there.
Trump, very loyal, though.
That's
true. As long as
you never
cross him.
He never did porn. He just did porn actresses.
And behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Sure, Putin's got some videos of it, but Trump
that's what they
did
were
it
into.
All behind closed doors. Like, it's not his fault. Fucking KGB's got bugs and cameras all over their state
Trump plazas.
The hotel that he stays in when he goes to Moscow to try and put together dirty deals.
Yeah, get ready for this, baby.
China,
it's going to be huge.
Different story.
So what?
China fucked dudes dressed as pro wrestlers, and then she did like the media rounds being like, yeah, Triple H beat the fuck out of me. I think that's where
Which
it's a step
sense.
Too far.
Right.
It's like, Triple H beat the fuck out of me when we were dating. And like,
he's the reason I had to get jaw surgery
Triple
to look
H
like a woman.
He's clearly a cuck. He's not beating the fuck out of anyone in his goddamn life. Oh yeah, I want all my women to just like beef the fuck up and take male fucking hormones, but then also like I'm very aggressive with them.
No. You see the way he goes after
his hands and knees getting his balls whipped.
Yeah, you see the way he goes after people for their size on TV. That means that whole like X-Pac banging China started while like he was banging China, and he was like, Sean, can you do me a favor?
Mm-hmm.
You just come into the room real quick.
Yeah, I'm gonna hide over here in this closet.
Yeah.
This horror movie slanted like fucking wood beam closet thing where I could peek through. Little shutters, one of those.
I need you to
it's in every horror movie.
I need you to suck on China's baby dick clit for a half hour while I touch myself in this closet.
Picture and like having Stephanie spray him with the garden hose while he's whimpering. Like, tell me I don't have enough mass.
Yeah.
Tell me I don't have enough mass.
Yeah.
There's no way that guy hit a woman.
Tell me I'm getting old man chest.
Oh man, is he getting old man chest?
A little bit.
That's so sad.
A little bit.
Even the guys that keep up with it, they always eventually get that concave Kofi Kingston chest.
Yeah, he's getting there. Not like our boy Jericho.
Oh, Chris Jericho. His body looks fucking terrible lately. Like he's got the puffy alcoholic face.
Yeah.
He's got the caving in old man chest.
Yeah.
He's got some like beefy thighs going on.
Yeah, he's
like,
been
leather rock and roll pants
heart.
Just like causing like total friction whenever he's out there running around on stage.
Yeah, he's starting to look like the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah, he's living my dream life, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I wish I could age 20 years right now and just be fucking old man Chris Jericho.
Yeah. His hair,
hanging
though,
on too long.
On point. I think that's all the modern wrestling we need to talk
about. Okay, let's go into our rundown then of the classic golden era wrestling we're going to be talking about this week. This week, we're back up north talking about that WWF Superstars from April 25th, 1992. This week, I'm going to say it's brought to us by a new sponsor.
Kaopectate!
I'm checking my messages right now. The check just cleared, so it's a new thing. I was listening to the Sean Mooney podcast while I was shoveling snow earlier.
Sean Mooney?
Primetime with Sean Mooney. We're watching these Superstars, and Sean Mooney is just dulcet tones in his handsome, chiseled face.
He messaged us. Why did he message us?
I'm not so sure. I don't know that I saw that. But check out his podcast, because this guy is the king of, you know, going out there and doing news reports for pro wrestling. These Superstars promos that we're seeing are proving that to me. And if I had a pro wrestling show out there these days, if I had one of these MLWs or these AEWs, and I didn't have some sort of, like, oh, let's go to our event center with Sean Mooney thing going up, where I could just, like, have him film 2 minutes in front of a green screen once a week, I'd be questioning my sanity. What am I doing? Why don't I have Sean Mooney sitting in front of a green screen throwing to promos? So, give Sean Mooney some love.
Did you like something he posted?
No, I don't know.
He messaged us back and was like, thanks for the like. Hope you can join me Sunday.
I haven't
asked Mooney anything.
Thought about Sean Mooney until I started seeing him on these new superstars from 1992 we're watching and thought to myself, you know what? People don't talk enough about how Sean Mooney was around for a long time, and there's a lot of wrestling nostalgia just in the voice of Sean Mooney, that honeyed voice.
You got to watch the Edge and Christian shows. He shows up on that.
I'm not watching shows.
Oh, you should. You're paying all that money for the network. Enjoy it.
I am not. I just have your password.
Oh, like everybody else I know. Sons of bitches.
How do you think this shit works?
I should be paying $1.11, and the other eight of you fucks should be carrying the other $1.11.
I wouldn't have the app at all. Our first match is the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Ever heard of him? Yeah, he's in there versus a guy named Ron Cumberledge.
Ever heard of him?
Never heard that name before attached to anybody.
Yeah, that's fair.
Either way, this is a very standard Flair fucking squash match. He goes through his four moves, and then he wins it with a figure four. Second match, Kevin Kruger is in there versus...
That's right.
The British Bulldog.
Kevin Kruger, Freddy Krueger's brother.
Mm-hmm. This is less infamous, brother. This guy did not molest anybody, as far as we know.
Yeah. It was more just like weird.
There's been
things.
Accusations, yeah. But nothing proven.
It wasn't like a full-on molest, but it was like, I don't think you should do that around children kind of a thing. Like, it's not illegal, sure.
Oh, my bad.
It's not illegal, but like...
I just misread the signals.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, you get it.
British Bulldog wins it with a running power slam.
Never heard of him.
Patented running power slam.
Welcome to prime time, bitch!
Coming up next, we've got the Beverly Brothers, Bo and Blake. They're in there versus Eric Collins and Mike Freedom.
Cool fucking name.
Mike Freedom's a real cool fucking name.
I like that he shaved his chest just to take this job tonight.
Yeah,
too.
He looked great. He had a cool name.
We'll get to all that.
Not enough for him, though, because the Beverly Brothers win was some sort of, like, it was like a pop-up.
It was awesome.
Buster, kind of.
It was awesome.
Toss the guy against the ropes. One guy pops him up, then the other guy brings him down with a face buster.
I'll get to it later. Okay. You're right.
Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels is in there next. He's going after George Anderson.
Oh, Shawn!
Not a very cool ring name, if you ask me. George Anderson.
George the Animal Anderson.
No pizzazz on that. Shawn wins with his patented teardrop suplex.
Where he just dumps the guy backwards onto his head?
Yet to transition that super kick into the finishing spot. He's doing the suplex. Sergeant Slaughter is in there versus the Brooklyn Brawler. Slaughter wins with his Cobra Clutch. Don't call it the Million Dollar Dream.
It's the Cobra
Clutch.
Got
a Cobra Clutch now.
Cobra was the bad guy. Yeah. Slaughter was G.I. Joe.
It's always very confusing to me when I was a kid, but, you know, the move predates the show, I guess. So what are you going to do?
Guess.
Kent Carlson and Tom Stone are a tag team. They're combining their forces to try and take down the natural disasters of the earthquake and the typhoon. But turns out they're two gigantic fucking fat guys, so you can't take them down. They win by squishing these guys with their big fat bodies. Mm. That's all it took. Our main event. Not
Never
a squash
takes
match.
Place.
Finally, not a squash match. We've got two named guys going after each other. Mr. Fuji's hot fucking upstart, the Berserker, who's been tearing this federation apart in the last few months, on his way to the Undertaker. They collide, but it's never really a match. It just kind of shit happens and it gets thrown out. We'll discuss this more in length as we get into our five count, which I'm going to smoothly transition into now. Boom, we're officially in the five count.
That was really good. I felt like I was waiting to get here, but
I feel like we're losing momentum now.
Oh, okay. My number one goes to the Ric Flair match.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of feelings as I watched this.
Okay.
Man, was it weird watching weekly episodic wrestling television with Ric Flair, not on WCW.
Mm, yeah, quintessential as a Southern wrestling face.
Like, just...
Got this, like, brief year and a half where he came up north. You're used to only seeing him being an old man when it comes to WWE.
Yeah. It just...
Which, even in 1992, he was kind of looking like an old man at this point.
Like, in 92, I can remember as a kid being like, that's that fucking guy from WCW.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can't be here. Yeah, that's that old guy.
What's that old? He's going to have a stroke if he gets in the ring with Hulk Hogan. What's he thinking?
And, you know, even being a smark these days and knowing all this shit and whatever the fuck you want to call it, it still felt fucking weird.
Mm-hmm.
Just like...
Mm-hmm.
Being like, here's weekly television.
Instead of Flair having the run of the place, he's like in that WWF machine, just like fitting into a segment, just like being another guy. And it's just like, Didn't you guys know this is Ric Flair?
And it made me stop, and it made me think. We talked about last week with WCW having all the talent on their
roster. WCW?
And I started thinking, like, man, you got Flair in here. The guy you can just build any kind of cocky-ass heel stable around, you know?
Definitely. He's lifted up a lot of guys lot of times.
And they were thinking about it, but, like, what you could have done here?
Really just feels like, what do you remember? You remember him winning the Rumble. You remember his feud with Randy Savage, and that was it. Yeah.
But you got him running.
Mr. Perfect was hanging out with him, but Mr. Perfect wasn't wrestling at the time.
Which is like, weird. But you got...
He had some run-ins with the Ultimate Warrior, which went nowhere and would have been just a stupid, terrible idea of a match.
You got this young kid, Shawn Michaels, that you're pushing to the moon. Mm-hmm. And you got Perfect always talking about how great Michaels is. You bring him in as like the Tully Blanchard of the group?
That could have worked out very well.
You know what I'm saying?
Could have worked out very
well. You're not far off from Razor coming to town.
Oh, yeah.
You put him with Flair already.
He's oozing machismo. He'd be perfect for a horseman type situation.
I'm saying if you could have put like these click guys and some of these other guys around with Flair, like, oh.
Instead, Vince just didn't get it. He was just like, yeah, you know what? We did some stuff with you. It was fun. Take a hike, buddy. Back down to the south with you.
Yeah, you used us to get leverage in your pay with WCW.
WCW?
WCW. And take a walk.
Yeah.
And he did.
I don't know.
But it's all weird.
Never put together that Hogan feud. Didn't do much with him other than feud him with Savage. It just
What was the story?
It was they, so weird.
They did like Hogan and Flair at like a house show.
Yeah, I guess
Vince
they just
was like,
that's
not good.
Yeah,
that's not good.
Like, no, nobody wants to see this. This is not the match. You know, people want Hogan versus Sid Justice. That's what's going to sell pay-per-views, pal. My number one is I just noticed that every week you watch these shows and there's a lot of mutants out in the crowd. The crowd's just like a lot of just like hillbilly fucking yokels. And for some reason, though, this week, I didn't catch where we were. I know Vince said it.
It was in Michigan.
We're up in Michigan. It makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of just ugliness in Michigan.
Home of kale pectate.
I did catch all the K-O-Pectate talk and all the Duke, the different Duke puns he was making, which were a lot of fun. But all these people in the crowd they looked like the type of Michigan people who just don't get out of the house enough. Maybe this was filmed in the winter or something. You get that cabin fever shit going on.
House the Steiners built, but if you think so.
So there was a lot of weirdos. Couple of my favorites, though, I just wanted to point them out. At one point, they just had the camera on a just fat kid with lines shaved in his head, 1992 style.
That's pretty
just
cool.
Just double-fisting popcorn into his mouth.
That's pretty cool.
It's like, oh, just took me back to 1992.
Did you get a timestamp on that kid? Because I'll screenshot it all day long.
No, I'll have to look at that.
Oh, yeah.
It's very early
You got to timestamp these.
Very early on. It's before even the first match.
I'll track him down for us.
Line shaved in his head, shoving popcorn.
Was he cool as ice?
Fat as fuck. He just looked like every best friend I had in like second grade and just took me back immediately. And I love this kid. And another one later on that stood out
to me. Royal Rumble came out for the Sega Genesis and the Super Nintendo, that's who you were playing it with.
Yeah, the fat kid with line shaved in the side of his head. Let's go play Skate or Die for a while.
Ooh.
Grown woman, just blank-eyed, shaking an action figure in the camera and doing a high-pitched howl.
Oh, when Michaels was out and she had the old Rockers
shaking,
Michaels figure.
Shaking that action. And
like a little kid.
We see this. We've seen this both weeks now.
Yeah.
Little kids shaking the action figures into the, like, I got an action figure.
The Hasbro figures. We're out of the LJNs and we're into the Hasbro era.
This woman
era.
Was 30 years old and she was holding her action figure and she was shaking it into the fucking camera and just doing the weirdest high-pitched howl.
Tell you what.
And I was like, I'd like to take that woman home, show her a thing or two.
I know where Shawn Michaels, that figure was going when she got home.
For sure. That thing, that didn't end the night clean.
No.
She waited for Shawn to, I don't care if they're announcing that Shawn Michaels has left the building. That's just a gimmick.
Yeah.
She, as soon as his match was over, she was around the back waiting for him to come out to his rental car.
Ooh, boy.
Might have got her eyes clawed out by Sherry. Who knows?
Who's to say?
Who's to say? But yeah, I just wanted to shout out this Michigan crowd because there was a couple gems in there. But even just overall, like, I was just looking at them all just like, oh, these people are like subterranean cave dwellers. They all look like this is the only time they've left their house in the last 6 months to
yeah,
come
there
out
was,
to this wrestling show.
There were some rough ones in the bunch.
Real rough.
My number two is going to go to, I liked Perfect's bullying of Vince McMahon.
He's calling him a dork a lot.
Yeah, that was great. Like,
because Vince McMahon is a dork.
He comes, he's not on commentary at the start of the show because he's out there with Flair.
Mm-hmm.
So then he shows up for the second match, and Vince is just doing like his fucking dad jokes, like, oh, you got something on the back of your jacket, pal. And he's like, yeah, it's my fucking name.
Yeah, it wasn't like, it was like he tried to create a joke out of that, but then like just didn't. It was just like, it was like we were all in on it. Like, oh, what's that on the back of your jacket?
Yeah,
it's like, it's his fucking name and sequins, man.
And that's essentially what Perfect says to him. And then was like, Vince, if you had a coat, it'd say dork across the back of it.
Very true.
Which is a great line. Vince, summed it all up.
Vince McMahon, famously not funny. So when you get him on fucking commentary and you can just see that firsthand, it starts to get uncomfortable here and there.
And, like, it's great. I like watching these guys riff on this dude that is their boss.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you hear all these horror stories from, like, these announcers these days that quit because Vince was too mean on the headset. Mm-hmm. And then you think about these days of, like, Perfect and fucking Jesse the Body just, like,
Jesse took
listen here, shit stain.
Great pleasure in just tearing down Vince. At all times, whenever he was out
and
there
like
with
they
him,
were out there week after
talking
week
talking about his toupee over and over again.
Like, Perfect winning hard on Vince's hair.
Some
he's like, you don't think your
hair
is cool,
right?
Do you, Vince? Like, you wake up in the morning, you leave the house, you don't think that looks good, do you?
Yeah,
that's good stuff.
So, like, my number two is also just talking about Perfect, and as I had one specific line poking out, I really liked it was during that Shawn Michaels match. Where we get a little corner promo of Bret Hart pop up, where he's like, hey, you know.
Yes, because we've
Michaels
said it a million times.
Thinks he's going to be the new IC champ, but I'm the champ, you know, blah, blah, blah.
My name's Bret Hart, though, you know.
But once Bret Hart's saying whatever his generic good guy Bret Hart shit is, what Perfect just goes, well, somebody get that guy a hairbrush? What a greaseball.
Yes.
And I fucking, like, cheered out loud.
Yes.
I was like, yes.
We've
why
said it so many times.
Why does people not talk enough about what an oily fucking greaseball
we talked
Bret
about
Hart
it
is.
2 weeks ago.
We talk about it, but back then especially, and like all the talk is about just like what a heartthrob Bret Hart is.
No.
And all the like women in the crowd, and I'm just like, no,
he's a
fucking oily fucking greaseball.
He's a greasy Canadian drip.
He definitely is a fucking, like, you just take a hillbilly out of the Canadian wilderness and then fucking put too much pomade in his hair. It's who wants that? Who likes that? And Perfect calling it out. I gotta wonder. This is weird how they're using. I get Perfect's like fucking injured here for a little bit, so they're finding things for him to do. But like, he's great on color commentary.
Yeah.
You get him out there with fucking Flair too, though, and it's like, oh, Flair's already coming out with Heenan. What is Heenan's already doing commentary too? And like, they're just going. They're just like, why don't these guys have any, like, solidified roles? Like, have Heenan be a manager or do commentary. Have Perfect be a manager or do commentary. Why are they going back and forth? Why does Flair need this whole crew of non-wrestlers around him when he's fucking Ric Flair? He can cut his own goddamn promos.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
He can cheat
like,
in the ring without needing a manager. He's done it a million times.
You got three, like, of the best talkers in the business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, working together, but, like, not.
Yeah, it's just weird, I don't get where they thought it was leading or what it was supposed to be.
And that was my point. Like,
they may be building up to, like, I mean, it does eventually
talent.
Build up to a Perfect turning on
Flair,
coming back as a wrestler and having a match, but I don't think that was planned because that only happened because fucking Warrior got fired right before he was supposed to fight Flair.
Well, you know.
They could have been planning for Warrior to get fired. You always got to have that plan in the
back
of your
head. I feel like, that's like a contingency. Like, open this envelope when.
So we're going to do this with Warrior for the next 6 months. But if we end up firing Warrior, we got this other thing.
Yeah, that's a contingency that you always just have on standby.
Could be. Maybe they were planning on keeping him with Flair loosely so that when he could come back as a wrestler, they could have some sort of fucking team going or whatever. Warrior. I don't know. Either way, it was just weird the way they're bouncing him around and not using him in a consistent way.
You got Warrior coming out there yelling at Sid Justice and like talking about that main event program. And then this week they bring Warrior out to talk about how he's gearing up to fight Skinner. There's your telltale sign right there. Like they were like, yeah, he's like fucking top of the charts, but like at the same time, like he's fighting Skinner because like he might not be in this company the week after.
Gotta have some tune-up matches before you get him back up in there with Sid Justice. Why not in there with Skinner? Skinner's a great character, Matt.
Oh, you're not telling me. I put him on one of my
forward
lists.
Forward to this next episode where we get to see Warrior versus Skinner.
I put Skinner on a three count somewhere. Yeah, I don't remember where.
It's definitely happened at some point.
I just remember it being there. My number three. I'm going to tell you right now. Mm-hmm. There's a team from 1992 mm-hmm. that I'm guilty of it. I know for a fact. Looking back on this show 2 weeks ago when we reviewed the first week, the Superstars.
That's right.
I poo-pooed him.
We got a little bit of a pop-up interview from them the last week, right?
I poo-pooed him 2 weeks ago covered it, and I poo-pooed him.
This week they got a match.
As a child, I said, these guys, no good. And I watched something here, and I'm never hearing people talk about them, and maybe they should. Mm-hmm. Beverly Brothers were legit, son.
Bo and Blake, very, very pleased with themselves. Calling the Legion of Doom, Legion of Sissies.
Guys... we're legit ski.
You pair them up with a Baby Oil and Blow classic favorite, Lanny Poffo. Like,
oh,
you got a little bit of a package right there.
You got something going on here.
I was wondering, we finally got a chance. We haven't had this in months and months. Did you transcribe the Lanny Poffo poem so that you could read it for us here?
I fucking let you down, and I should have, because I thought about it as it passed.
Thought for sure you were going to do that,
God
man.
Damn it. I blew it. I fucking blew it.
Okay.
I should have had
on.
It.
Move on.
But these guys, man, like, you got Money Inc. with the titles here?
Mm-hmm.
I should be on these cats.
Beverly Brothers, wow, it's an interesting claim to make. I mean, we've seen one of their matches at this point. It was pretty good. They had
everything
that cool
they did was spot on, man. These guys have the athleticism. They got the stupid look. You got genius there to make sure people are pissed off.
I just love how they have the genius there, and they're calling their opponents sissies over and over again.
With the genius.
Just with him standing right there and him calling people sissies, too. And I just feel like every single second Lanny Poffo shows up on our screen, he's accusing someone of being gay while being the most flamingly homosexual man I've ever seen in my life. And to this day, I just like... anytime I hear him do a shoot interview, he's like, well, quite frankly, this other man was kind of a puffer. And it's just like, Lanny Poffo, you're in like your 60s or whatever. Who are you fooling?
I tell you what, this guy I wrestled with preferred the comfort of another man's penis in his buttocks.
I've never seen anyone just more hard-nosed about fucking admitting that they're gay. God, that Angelo Poffo, their dad, must have been a real ball buster.
Yeah.
He's still not letting it go.
Must have been one of them real abusive fucks, you know?
You got to imagine so.
Yeah.
Randy always had the sort of countenance of a dog that's been kicked a few too
many
times.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very jittery.
Yeah.
Looking around a lot. Ugh.
Oh, yeah. Like,
there was some gross stuff going on in the Poffo house.
Oh, man.
House.
We got him in.
Imagine.
We got him in the shelter, but I just don't know if we're going to be able to adopt him out.
He's skittish. He's very skittish.
It's good. He's going to need a very patient home, you know?
That's true.
But the best part is Lanny Poffo, he's doing the same shit he did as a face.
Which never worked.
88.
And we were always very confused
88.
As to why he was a good guy back then.
And now they were just like, just keep doing that, but we're going to... you're a bad guy,
just
though.
Just keep doing that thing that everybody hates, and we'll just lean into people hating it.
But the Beverly Brothers, man,
classic bleach blonde heels.
Yeah.
Cocky.
They're fucking hill rods.
A couple of fucking hill rods.
Painted up as city beauties.
A couple of, like Nature Boy Buddy Landell.
Oh, yeah.
They just, like, seems
like
sort
real
of
fucking, yeah.
Off-brand. Yeah. Or like a real wrestling team.
As soon as this...
like these guys are definitely like the Filmation's Midnight Express going on
right
here, the Beverly Brothers.
As soon as this taping's over, we're leaving this arena and we're going to pick up a 30 rack of whatever's cheap and then drive to the next town.
For sure.
While drinking that in our Fiero.
Maybe with the stop at the Waffle House.
Well, you gotta eat somewhere along the lines.
My number three is I just want to talk about that Sid promo a little bit. Sid Justice got the weekly out on the fucking ramp with Gene Okerlund promo.
Nate.
Uh-huh.
It was his best, most sensical promo of all time.
Sid comes out for no fucking reason, dripping wet. Just dripping wet head to toe.
He's sparkly.
For an interview.
He looks like Robert Pattinson in Twilight, sparkly.
And every time he moves, he's so wet, there's just fucking water flicking off of him in every direction. He starts the promo by screaming in Gene's face, and like so much spit and water comes off of him. And
I don't know what it was.
Gets in Gene's like mouth and eyeballs and face while he was trying to talk. That Gene's like legit, like he's selling it, I think, doing a little bit of like a, he's screaming, but like also he's legitimately very mad about it. You could tell how mad he is.
Did they say
Sid Justice spits in his fucking face, essentially.
Did they say what Mean Gene died of? I mean, besides cirrhosis of the liver?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I didn't really look into it. An old guy dies, and I just generally I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
I'm just saying he had to have had all the hepatitises. On account of how many wrestlers spit into his mouth.
Fucking a dripping wet Sid Justice just taking everything that's on and in his body and then just flicking it inside your fucking mucous membrane.
Every wrestler.
That's why he's got to fucking pound martinis all day and all night to try and kill some of that
neutralize
shit that's coming
that.
Off these wrestlers. It's the same reason why whenever I went to a wrestling
Ginny
show.
Gin Gin.
When I was a kid, I'd always try to get seats down there on the aisle, and my mother, whenever we were leaving, would always be like, don't touch any of the wrestlers when they go by. And I'd be like, what's she talking about? This woman's crazy. Looking back, no, she's right. Don't touch any of those wrestlers.
Yeah, that's a first-class ticket to Hep C, baby. I got a four.
Okay, go into it.
Everything Shawn Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
Just all of it.
Comes out. Has a match.
Just love it. But I really forgot
on the ground.
About how great it was, and you mentioned it earlier, the Shawn Michaels has left the building.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When they would go out of their way every week to do that. What a way to get people to hate a fucking guy.
They always accompany it with great crowd shots of people just be like, oh, we don't care.
We don't
care. Why are you telling us this?
But it's great because they still showed enough of the women being like, yeah. Yeah, I'd let him throw one in me. Like, I got a white on right now.
Yeah, and it's weird, too, because, like...
I got a Reddit, subreddit lady boners going right now.
This era of Michaels, not really doing it for me as far as Michaels goes. He's a little on the chubby side. He's got that ridiculous fucking mullet going on.
Sure.
But the women, they're still reacting.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a couple years from now, dude's gonna be, like, fucking shredded and look way better.
Right.
But, like... At this point...
Well, that's why he's got Pam Anderson
He's still oozing something that these women are responding to. And the shit where he just, like, grabs Sherry by the hair and tosses her around and throws her on the ground and stuff.
That's probably
like
what
romance novel style. Like,
it's probably what they're
into.
That's
definitely what some of them are responding to. It's all real good shit. Those two as a duo, that little act they had going, she was never any better than when she was fucking managing Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Did a lot of other good stuff. Managed a lot of other guys, but it was never just like the complete package it was like it was with these two.
Right. I'd say outside of this, my favorite work she did was as what's the hillbilly rock and roller girlfriend of Honky Tonk Man, Peggy Sue.
Yeah, sure. And the big wig playing Peggy Sue.
But it was a great bit. And she fucking nailed it.
Very short-lived. Should have made something better out of that. Honky had a lot of heat.
But that's all right. Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels on his way to that Intercontinental title.
It's no wonder you are the greatest of all time.
My number four is just the twinge of nostalgia I got watching the Natural Disasters squash this tag team.
Yeah.
Because there are just no great big fat guys in wrestling anymore. Like, if you get a guy who's used to have been, like, what's called a hoss, these are the guys they're pushing as, like, the big fat guys these days.
Our boy in MLW, Barrington Hughes, you watched any of his work?
Not really.
You need to check him out. I've watched a couple of his matches, And he's just a big boy that's got a limited moveset, and he's just going to hurt you.
I saw a little bit of like when they were building up some sort of feud with him and some other big fat guy. He was like on commentary during this other fat guy's match, and it was like, these guys are coming together. And I was like, that seems like something I'd want to watch. WWF, though, I saw recently they got this tag team Heavy Machinery that they're pushing as like the new Natural Disasters, essentially. These guys aren't very big, Matt.
No, and they're
not
just
very
them...
tall. They're not very fat. They're just like thick.
And they're just making them do a comedy bullshit.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I like that these guys have a little bit different of like a style and a little bit different of a physique than everybody else on the roster, fucking super kicking and doing springboards ad nauseum. But it's not the same as just super great big fat guys. Fucking Earthquake in this match, literally 10 seconds in. His entire fucking forehead just covered in Davey R. Scheister flop sweat.
Yeah.
Just like by the time they had even walked to the ring, he might have
He's
worked
blown
up.
Just like He's gassed.
An insane amount of fucking flop sweat.
And they walked slowly.
You don't see that shit anymore. I think like Big Viscera was probably the last person you saw on that WWE roster that was just like an outrageously huge, gargantuan human being. Just sign a couple of these big boys, Vince. It used to be something you loved.
You gotta
use their big bodies to squish people.
You gotta check out our guy Barrington Hughes. He's doing some things you want to see.
Nia Jax was turning everybody's heads at your fucking birthday party because she's four times the size of everyone else in the ring with her.
Our boy Barrington Hughes did a War Games and he could barely get through the cage door with the ropes in the way.
That's good stuff. People come out to gawk at that.
Yeah. That's a spectacle. People want to see that.
It's an essential part of the history of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
There needs to be more of it. Not even Japan's really doing it anymore. Most recently, they had like some Aki Bono shit going on, but like all those guys have died. You don't even get any huge fat guys in Japan anymore.
When you turn away from that, I feel like you're trying to turn away from the carnival barker aspect of your job. Like, don't be
if
like
you could be.
Don't be high and mighty.
Carnival,
don't be high and
be
mighty.
Be part of the carnival. That's everybody's dream.
This is where you made your fucking bones.
Don't make your shits legits. That's boring.
Yeah, no shits legits.
That's it. I just wanted to get up on my soapbox there.
No, you did the right thing.
Okay,
I got a number five, and it's just that whole Berserker Taker.
Yeah, that's also my number five. It's
just
this
all
debacle.
It's awful. It's perfect. It's terrible. It's great. It was just, man, what a time to be alive.
So to run it down, there's supposed to be a Berserker versus Undertaker match. Before the match, Mr. Fuji steals the urn from Paul Bearer.
Which is genius. Everybody knows.
And then when they're all like, ooh, we got to get the urn back, the Berserker just Pearl Harbors the Undertaker with his shield, beats the shit out of him with his shield a bunch. Taker's staggered. So then Berserker goes and gets his sword.
He's like, here's my chance.
He carries a sword to the ring. And then he tries to
Jack
stab
Tunney,
it through the heart.
Jack Tunney hasn't decided, like, man, you shouldn't carry that sword to the ring.
There's probably going to have to be a ruling. Because he took it and he tried to stab it through the heart of the Undertaker.
Well, first he hits him in the back with
he
the
does.
Sword.
It's just like a flat-backed, like, swat with the sword. It's like, well, if you were trying to kill him with the sword, you should just hit him with the edge of that. Yeah. Like, you could have slashed him really bad. Undertaker moves, the sword goes into the ring canvas. It's
great image.
Yeah, just stabbed in there. He takes him outside. He pile drives the Undertaker onto the concrete.
Yeah, removes the mat.
Undertaker seemingly going to be dead. But at this point, Paul Bearer is able to get the urn back, which he uses to revive the Undertaker because his powers are inside of the urn, Matt.
Everybody knows that.
And then it's kind of just like a stalemate. Like, it's been wild. It's been crazy. We're not going to have a match. Berserker took it to the Undertaker like nobody has, though. And, like, it was kind of fun and it was kind of cartoony, but, like, just that image of him trying to kill him with the sword I keep going back to, because I'm like, they had fucking Brian Pillman pull out a gun on Steve Austin.
Sure.
Like, 4 years later when they were doing a much edgier thing.
Caught a lot
and, like,
of flack, yeah.
People freaked the fuck out about it, and, like, they had to, like, apologize or whatever, I think.
Yeah.
Why here in 1992 when they're doing a much more kiddie product and somebody tries to murder another guy with a sword, did you just not hear anything about it? And it wasn't a thing that like anybody was, any of those uptight moms out there were outraged about.
Like, the sword at least had a tip on it because it fucking stuck in
it,
that.
It went into the canvas.
Into that.
It was a legit attempted
plywood
murder.
Underneath the canvas.
Maybe I guess speaks to that 1996 product as being something people were taking a little bit more seriously. Nobody was watching it here. Nobody was taking any of it fucking seriously.
I guess.
Or maybe just like that's when parenting started changing a little bit and like people started actually paying attention to their kids. The era of latchkey children was fucking ending. And
helicopter
now,
parents.
Now you get these helicopter parents moving in.
It's bullshit. Like,
I don't want people pulling out guns in the pro wrestling. Shit.
Like my parents were there when I was watching all that stupid trashy shit. You
Not
know what
mine.
They would
my
do?
My parents had no idea what I was watching.
Either
ever.
Way.
That's my, how God intends it.
My parents would see it and all they'd be, do is just be like, that's just garbage. That. Like that's stupid.
That's fake.
That's stupid.
He wasn't really trying to kill him.
And then walk away.
I'm a dad. I know better.
Yeah.
Either way, kind of fun, kind of ridiculous. Doesn't really set up any sort of big feud between these two.
Well,
because
he never fucking did anything with Berserker after this.
It was kind of interesting to see somebody whoop the Taker's ass. I don't think that really happened at this point. Like, just somebody just fucking whooping the Taker's ass.
Yeah, he was the first to really take it to him until, like, Kama steals the urn and melts it down.
Oh, this the dastardly fucking fighting machine, Kama. I wished it would have been a little bit more of a match rather than a schmoz just based on the fact that it was the only non-squash match on this show.
Or if this would have built to something that would become a match.
So overall, this episode, not as good as the last one we watched.
No.
So like, I did not enjoy it as much.
This
one
was a little too cookie cutter.
Much more of a nothing burger.
Yeah. And a little too cookie cutter.
We could have got at least like one match here at the end when there was a little bit of a back and forth. That would have made it felt a little bit more worth my time.
We said 2 weeks ago how much we liked the formula, but this week seemed a little too...
That's that.
This seemed a little too formula
reliant.
That razor's
edge you're always on with the WWF. Yeah. Like, there's pluses and minuses to how rigid it is, but how... not fucking off the rails it gets.
Yeah, this
at WCW's the other side of the coin.
This was definitely like squash Okerlund, squash Mooney, squash Mooney again. Couple of interviews, throw it home.
Like not even nearly as much over the top ridiculous promos for the World Bodybuilding Federation this
right.
week, which I was kind of sad about. I really want to watch them fail at pushing that as a thing.
You really got a lot of Lex Luger in that video for the WBF commercial, though.
Yeah,
I didn't notice him 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, he's in there. He's made the big jump from WCW at the beginning of 92 to now he's going to start showing up as a host of Body Stars.
That's huge WCW face, Lex Luger.
I think he got, like, a lot of money just to, like... do Body Stars for a couple weeks and then sit around the rest of the year.
Oh,
Body Stars failed.
Yeah,
too.
He had to.
Like he cashed big paychecks.
He had
of that
to.
Failed World Bodybuilding Federation.
Well, I mean, he was sitting pretty with WCW. I mean, it's not like he was like
he went out as the champ,
struggling for work.
It was the end of '91. He was the champ. It only had like a couple more appearances left on his contract, and he kind of held them up for money. So I'm sure like he was making bank then. Made bank for his new gig. It was never really any good. Lex Luger was straight up Kevin Nash robbing these people for a while.
I hope he saved some of it so he can afford all those wheelchairs and FUBU jerseys these days.
Do they make FUBU wheelchairs? If so, I bet he's
if
got
so,
one.
If so, he's got to have
he's
one.
He's got one.
Him and Draws. Yeah.
And that'll wrap it up for...
Yeah? You want to end it there?
Let's take a little break, and then we'll come back, and we'll do a three count.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
At last, three great comedies are back together on a classic Fox Sunday. First, it's Fire Marshal Bill versus the Alien.
Don't touch him! He's got my eyes!
And all new in living color. Then, for one special night only, the Simpsons are back on Sunday.
Yeah!
And the Bundys are still living it up in London.
Just somebody should have told that toilet the Yanks were coming.
On an all-new Meredith's Children. Three great comedies together again for one night only on a classic Fox Sunday.
Monday, it's the Fresh Prince Olympiad.
Let the games begin.
There's the Silly Tricycle Sprints, the Squirt Gun Biathlon, and Penalty Box Boxing. Will plays a game show on an all-new Fresh Prince. Then Blossom and Joey shoot a rock video with help from guest star Salt and Pepper.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
It's an all-new Blossom after the Fresh Prince, NBC Monday.
It's an evening of firsts on TGIF.
Will you go to the dance with me?
No.
It's Urkel's first homecoming dance on Family Matters. Then, Frank needs some first aid. Step by step.
Help me.
Then, it's baby's first dirty word.
What do you call me?
Dinosaurs, and it's Dorfman's first job.
I want you to have these.
These are for the patient in room 301.
The guy's in a coma. Live a little.
Camp Wilder, it's an evening of firsts on TGIF. TGIF.
As Henry Rollins said, we're going to have a TV party tonight.
Henry Rollins said that?
Yeah.
To who?
We've got nothing better to do. And sit back and have a couple of brews. TV party. All right.
I think I can see why he's so well respected among the community of like white guys who are into things.
Yeah.
Because he's got a lot of wisdom up there in that tattooed noggin of his.
Yeah, he's got tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of them.
Yeah.
I like that he was in the important punk band Black Flag.
Sure, yeah.
Which a lot of people have.
I saw that documentary about the punk scene.
Yeah, a lot of people have the Black Flag logo tattooed on their body, their person.
Oh, gross.
But like before they did.
Super gross.
Before they all did, he did while he was in Black Flag.
That's not very punk.
I think it was.
Your own band's logo, I'm not so sure about that.
He got it. He understood merchandising. He was like, this is going to be on a lot of shirts someday.
It's like whenever there's like a guy in that sort of like nerdy metalhead or punk rock or whatever fucking scene who like also like works out a little bit and like just clearly like something other than just like a basement dwelling like beta male.
Yeah.
Like they're always just instantly made like, oh, this guy's a fucking legend. He's so fucking cool. Like people will quote fucking Henry Rollins just like he's some sort of like warrior poet philosopher.
Yeah.
Because he's like the only one in that scene who ever like picked up a fucking weight in his entire life and
sure.
didn't look like a complete fucking wiener.
You know, Anthony Kiedis came out of that era, and he always had a six-pack.
He was much more like a SoCal funk, like, I don't eat enough calories in the day.
He had more
like
the
sort of stringy
Iggy Pop kind of fit.
Much more of an Iggy Pop thing.
All right, that's fair. You're right. Rollins had a little bulk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Looks, he's fucking great in The Chase.
Oh,
which you know is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, just he really pulls off that dickhead cop thing very, very well.
I was just talking to the little lady about it the other day. There's a famous episode of a 90s hit television show, Friends.
Okay.
Where Phoebe walks in and everybody's watching Old Yeller.
Okay.
And they're all crying.
I'm not putting together like the connect to the dots.
Well, hold on,
this yet.
So
seems like a jump so far.
Phoebe walks in and everybody's watching Old Yeller and they're all crying. And she's like, well, why are you guys crying? And they're like, we're watching Old Yeller. And she's like, yeah, well, it's a great movie. It's a fun movie. And they're like, it's fucking Old Yeller.
Yeah,
and she's like,
famously not a good time.
She's like no.
Ends up crying.
She's like, the dog saves his owner and then the movie ends. And they're like, that's not how the movie ends. And it turns out her mom used to stop the video.
Uh-huh.
Like after he saved the boy and like didn't show her the ending. And so like they're showing her
that's
the ending.
Helicopter parenting right there.
And she's like, why is this happening? Like, why are you doing it? Stop the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it made me realize like when I was a weird teen and I used to watch The Chase with Charlie Sheen on VHS. On my, you know, 17, 19 inch. TV VCR
so
combo.
You owned that movie on VHS, so you could watch it whenever you wanted.
I would watch Chase.
I knew that you liked that movie. I did not know you liked that movie.
Yeah, fuck yeah. And so I'd get to the end scene where he's like, they're at the border, and he's like, fuck it. Like, we ain't making it to Mexico. Like, I've gotten as far as I can. Like, this is a mistake. My life's a mess. You're like, you're a sweet young lady. Christy Swanson. Oh, hell yeah.
I couldn't remember if it was her or who we mentioned last week, Erica Alinda.
No. This is a Christy Swanson.
Out of the cake in Under Siege.
This is definitely a Christy Swanson vehicle.
So much better actor than Erica Alinda.
Yeah.
He's like that Christy Swanson.
He's like, I can't drag you in this any further. Like, you got to get out. And she's like, but we fell in love. And he's like, I know, but it was like a short movie. Like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you just gotta save your life. And she's like,
we've literally known each other for like 45 minutes.
Begrudgingly,
and I had a gun in your ribs for most of it.
But it was just a girl finger.
Girl, you got weird issues. If you like,
if that's what turned you on, yeah. So she gets out of the car and they cue up that London suede "See You in the Next Life." Wiggle far,
right?
Away,
yeah.
From here,
and he just, famous soundtrack, like, "The Chase." Yeah. People still listen to it on vinyl.
He's like, man, I gotta. He's like thinking about everything, and he's like, fuck it, like this is it, man. So he like gets out of the car and he's just like doing the whole fucking. He's all like slow motion,
like
smoking
he's
a cigarette.
Sheen,
yeah,
like, oh,
yeah.
This is
he's fucking slow motion.
This guy carries a lot of weight.
Smoking
around.
A cigarette, and he flicks it, and then he reaches into his shirt and pulls out a gun, but it's no gun. It's just his fucking hand. And the cops just light him up and shoot him dead. They shoot him dead. And that's where I always stopped him. I was like, bam. Like, I don't want the happy
ending.
Did you
erase the end of the VHS?
This is the perfect sad ending.
Didn't accidentally see any of... How happy does that ending get? Because...
Yeah, they make it to Mexico. And they
drink
island drinks.
A corner. Yeah, the idea of them getting out of that situation...
Like, and they do.
Being barricaded at the border and surrounded by 1,000 cops is
fucking
insane. That's a terrible ending for a movie.
They should just let him die.
Although you did get to see Christy Swanson in like the bikini at the very end there. She's like handing him frosty drinks.
Yeah.
So you got to get that in there somehow.
I said new salt. New salt. Same movie, right?
I'm not so sure. I never owned The Chase on VHS. So while I do have fond memories of Henry Rollins and Anthony Kiedis and Flea having their cameos.
It's our monster truck. It's
I
monster
could not
truck.
Quote from it. What I could quote from, though, is a lot of the TV shows we're going to be talking about this week.
Nate, I like to consider myself a modern-day street prophet.
A lot of my favorites are going to be on this.
That's a Henry Rollins quote from The Chase.
Okay, perfect. Last week, we dug into 92 a little bit into the pop culture going on at the time. Like, where was everybody's heads at? By talking about the movies of 1992.
Mm.
So this week, we're going to be talking about the television of 1992. If you're talking about TV in 1992, you're full on talking about network television. This is before the rise of, like, the golden age of cable, like, actual good shows. No. This is shit sitcoms and one-hour dramas on the fucking main... 4 TV channels. It's all anybody watched. Everybody watched them. You talked about them the next day because everybody had to watch them at the same time because once something was on TV and then was off, it was done. You couldn't see it again. People used to have a shared culture back in the day.
Yeah, what, are you going to wait for the summer for the reruns?
So I thought it'd be cool to like to dig into this, and I really like falling down this rabbit hole every once in a while, looking back at these lineups that used to happen in the 90s. Like, what was the lineup this night versus that night? If it were, I'd watch CBS on this night, but then I'd watch ABC the next night, and ooh, maybe I'd flip back and forth once or twice, but usually I was riding out the whole lineup. So my question is, in 1992, you're looking at all these network lineups. Who had the best nights? Who put together the best chunks? Talking like 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock prime time programming.
And 7 Central Time. Central Time, folks.
I've got my 3 favorites. We are on Central Time here, and I'm going to dig into it a little bit. I'm going to dig a little bit into the psychology of my young brain and why I was watching what I was watching.
I got mine, my number 3, and I'm coming out strong, and this could easily...
Hot out the gate.
This could easily be a number 1 because of how fucking good
it is. I feel the same way about all my picks.
This one right here, man.
TV was on fire in 1992.
This is an automatic. This isn't like a me trying to show off or anything. It's like, who the fuck were you if you weren't watching this shit right here? And this is a... This is from the 91-92 schedule you sent me.
Okay, yeah, sure.
I think this is a... this is like a... Yeah, it's fall and spring, so like this is into 92.
Spring in 92. We're talking spring in 92 here.
It's a Tuesday night.
Oh, no. I know we were watching the same thing, Tuesday nights.
It's on ABC.
That's right, brother.
I'm going Full House into Home Improvement. Mm-hmm. Into fucking Roseanne.
Oh, man.
And then...
Lanford.
You might not have liked it as a kid, but you came to appreciate it later, because guy's a fucking genius. Craig T. Nielsen and fucking Coach. Motherfucking
Coach. This is also my number three.
Man.
Spring ABC Tuesdays is also my number three.
That's a legendary fucking lineup.
Powerhouse lineup, and I wanted to address that Coach situation because thinking about Coach, it was just like an old man show. Like, even the characters are like older than the characters on any other show.
Right.
Like fucking Coach and Coach's girlfriend, like they were fucking old and they were the young people on the show.
Jerry Van Dyke.
Jerry Van Dyke.
This is 92.
Was fucking 100 years old.
Yeah, he's old as balls because he's fucking Dick Van Dyke's brother.
So,
and this is decades after the Dick Van Dyke show.
I've always wondered to myself, like, why did I watch so much fucking Coach when I was like, I don't
right?
Even, I wouldn't watch football. I didn't like football, so it wasn't like, oh, the show's about football, so that's why it's fun.
Damn it, Dobber.
There's no reason for me to watch Coach as a kid, but it was
he
just
was Hank Hill before there was Hank Hill.
It had such an amazing fucking lead-in with this powerhouse,
yeah,
Full House, Home Improvement, Roseanne lineup. What are you gonna do? Change the channel at that point? Nah, you're settled in for Coach because it's about fucking bedtime. And geez, man, Full House, like, say what you will about it. I didn't have any memories of it not being on Fridays.
But apparently
here
no,
in 92, they moved it off TGIF and into Tuesday. Then you're gonna pair it with Home Improvement, which sort of took up the fucking flame, I feel, as like, if that was the show of the early 90s,
sure.
Home Improvement became the show of the mid-90s. Like,
right.
These are two of the biggest fucking shows goddamn ever.
Yeah.
Into Roseanne, like...
Which was fucking huge,
Roseanne,
man,
was a phenomenon. Maybe that was the late 80s, maybe, when it reached its peak, I think. Like, that first couple seasons of it was very revolutionary.
Sure.
Never my favorite, but, you know, there was always something decent to watch on Roseanne.
Right.
It was that... That Darlene was very sassy, Matt. Everybody loves John Goodman.
That's true.
This might be, top to bottom, the most just like powerhouse half-hour comedy sitcom lineup that's ever fucking been on TV.
It's strong, man.
It's like you get the next fall, Home Improvement's moved because it can anchor its own night because it's getting that popular, and they replace that with Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Cooper!
It's basically, yeah, the same
never
thing.
Never knew how much I
but
missed
Cooper
her.
Instead of that, and that's a downgrade, but that's still pretty solid. Fall of 92, Tuesday ABC, throw Mr. Cooper in there instead of Home Improvement. That's up there, too. That's up there, too.
Not the same.
It's not the same.
This
is fucking up there, man.
This is like Mount Rushmore of sitcom right here.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, you got some real fucking heavyweights going at it.
And Coach.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, and Coach.
Dauber was so dumb,
but like,
Matt.
Here's the thing, like, you know how... Well, I'm a big Home Improvement fan. I grew up loving that show, and I've made you go back and watch some now.
Oh yeah,
and
I've
you're
been
like,
trying.
Yeah, yeah, you're watching them here and there.
It's.
I feel if somebody
it's a really bad show.
If somebody would make Coach accessible to us.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, now
I
that
feel
we're
like we'd really enjoy
old
that.
Old and leathery, we could be like, some of this humor was really going over my head watching Coach as a child.
He was just like a hybrid of Al Bundy and Hank Hill.
The trials and tribulations of an aging man dealing with a bunch of young football players. I bet there was some comedy there.
He's got a kind of young, kind of attractive wife.
I remember
Christine.
Always thinking that Christine was kind of hot, even though I knew she was like also kind of an old lady. As a little kid, I was kind of just like, I'd probably get with that old lady.
Working through some things, you know, maybe there was a divorce. I don't know. I don't remember the storyline well enough.
Jerry Van Dyke was always hungry.
Yeah.
That's funny. Whenever there's a character on a show that's always hungry,
That's
a fucking classic bit you can always go back to.
And like, let's be honest, much like his brother, Dick Van Dyke, he was probably just coming off a bender.
Oh, there was a lot of drinking on the set of Coach. I
can
guarantee you that. Yeah. And like old man drinking. Like they were fucking opening up decanters and like draining them.
While we're here,
because
I don't think we'll ever get the chance to get back here in our show's history.
Okay.
Could we give a little love to our buddy Craig T. Nielsen and a favorite project of both of ours?
Oh, are we talking about
Family
the
Stone?
Family Stone. Very
Family
underrated
Stone.
Holiday time.
Yeah.
Yeah, his chemistry with Luke Wilson.
I was going to say, might
when
be...
When they're doing Jays together.
Might be Luke Wilson's...
I think next to a football field on some stands there. A little Coach winking a nod, maybe. They're doing Jays and just hashing it out.
Might be Luke Wilson's legit best work.
Oh, yeah, I can't think of anything else I like him.
I mean, Royal Tenenbaums, but, like, that's just because...
Yeah, it doesn't count.
Yeah,
Wes Anderson stuff doesn't count. Yeah, they all came from the same hood.
Yeah, yeah, no, this is, like, his, like somebody else believing in him and putting him in a movie.
Yeah. It's Family definitely Stone. Better than that My Girlfriend's a Superhero movie.
Y'all got to check that out. No, that movie's all about Rainn Wilson.
So shared number three is... I don't think we're going to go all the way through, but it might happen.
Number two.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we had very similar tastes in TV as children.
This is the original, the fucking start. It's not the pinnacle, but like it's there. Because there's one show that leaves and another show comes in. But this is right up there of that Friday night.
Gonna have some fun?
Show you how it's done.
TGIF.
That's right.
That's ABC Friday nights.
I'm going ABC's lineup of Family Matters.
Who?
Step by Step.
Mm-hmm.
Dinosaurs.
Yep.
Into one of my all-time favorites.
Uh-huh.
Perfect Strangers.
Perfect Strangers. Okay. Perfect
Strangers. This is my number two right here.
That makes...
This was big shit here. This is 92.
Yeah, see, if you would have quizzed me on this without me looking at this, I would have thought that Full House was in there as that fourth. But no, it wasn't. It wasn't. They had a rotating fucking fourth spot going on.
I don't know if it was 90 or 91 when Full House was in there.
Oh,
and then
it was
they 92 it,
that
and then they came back.
They bumped it to Tuesday. Throughout its rest of its run to 95, it was a Tuesday night show.
Oh, it was for the rest
of
the time?
Yeah, I fell down a Wikipedia hole.
Okay.
Trying to look at all this stuff.
I know it was there, but this lineup right here, Family Matters, which they brought Urkel on to Full House.
Urkel was...
To say, like, hey,
good
white...
God.
They said, hey, white families, I know it's a bunch of black
Urkel
people.
Urkel was on fire.
But we brought this black
guy
onto your show.
These are friendly black people, Midwestern white people. You don't have to be afraid of them.
Oh, it takes place in Chicago? That's true.
Come
we do
over.
Have black people
come
here.
Over
we
and
do
see what we're doing on this. We didn't call it Urkel. That was probably a mistake. No. We should just call it the Urkel Show.
Step by Step?
Yeah.
Fucking Code Man?
That's, in my mind, that was sort of latter day TGIF. I figured that was more of a 94, 95. I saw that as like coming in as Full House was ending its run. But
step by Step?
That
no.
Wrong,
no.
All the way back
step
in 92.
Step House was there, man. Yeah.
Step by Step was happening. Like,
yeah.
Much more longevity of that show than I gave it credit for.
Yeah, TGIF. Like with...
I gotta tell you, that Al from Step by Step,
ooh,
who started off as like the tomboy sister, but then very quickly turned into the hot sister. That always annoyed me because she was always like so much hotter than the other sisters, but they were still trying to play the characters of like, oh, that mousy brunette's the over-the-top hot girl, and then this smoking hot little number Al, she's a gruff tomboy. I was like, all right, casting department on Step by Step. You didn't really do your job here.
Yeah, they needed...
You didn't take puberty into account.
They needed someone with a good eye for underage girls.
I feel like you would have fucking killed that job,
if I was
man.
A grown man just in the late 80s, early
90s. Casting young girls for new TGIF shows? That's like a dream job for you.
I would have murdered it, man. Like, my ability second
literally,
to none.
You probably would have had to murder somebody to stay out of jail.
Duh, yeah, but like you could get away with it back then.
Yeah, they had so much less technology and so many less surveillance things around.
But these
you
four...
You kill anybody you wanted in 92.
These four shows, and this might be to the point where Perfect Strangers, they move out of their apartment and they get that house.
This is very late city. Perfect Strangers. It's only like...
Or it got bad.
They kept plugging it in, like, a little bit there, because, like, everything else was failing in this fucking, like, fourth slot in TGIF.
Balky and Larry.
But Perfect Strangers, even late Perfect Strangers, still fucking Perfect Strangers.
Yeah, it's still Balky and Larry, but they...
Oh, that Balky and Larry chemistry?
Come on! They settled down with the... I don't think they were twins. They might have been
sisters. They were
definitely
sisters.
Yeah, that lived in the apartment complex with them.
It was a very...
And they bought a
the
house.
Movie Twins vibe, though.
Yeah.
Like, two blonde sisters. And two fucking weird guys.
Do the dance of joy. Die, 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 die.
So many good catchphrases came out of that show.
Hey. Oh,
also,
Cousin Larry, don't be ridiculous.
Family Matters was the Perfect Strangers spinoff. Harriet, the mom on that, was working at the the building that Larry worked in. So,
oh, that's right. They were both in there. Chicago. Some Harriet was the spinoff, there. But then they had Steve show up on Full House to get the rest of the white vote.
Big old crossover potential there. You get Michelle and Urkel doing dueling catchphrases.
Yeah. Did I do that?
It's broke ratings records that still haven't been touched to today.
That episode of New Girl where Jess keeps saying, "Did I do that?" And the hipsters think she's great.
Yeah, that's...
That's solid writing right there.
Sort of thing that we do. We try to bring back catchphrases of things because the young people don't know what they are anymore.
Idiots. You're all stupid.
Fools. My number two is a little thing I like to call Fox Fall Thursdays in 1992. Thursdays was a big night because it was Simpsons night. And you can put anything fucking else on here, and Simpsons would still make it rank, because goddamn Simpsons was the show. Simpsons was my main appointment every fucking week. If we're talking 1991, well, then back then the lineup was Simpsons into Drexel's Class.
Drexel's Class.
Beverly Hills
strong.
90210.
Yeah.
Which is fucking unstoppable. We're not talking 1991. That would have been my number one if we were doing 91. Yeah. Next year, things changed a little bit. 90210 got so popular, they spun it off to Wednesday, put it on Melrose Place, and had it anchor its own fucking, like, teen drama night.
Yeah.
That's a big, big hole you got to fill here. Drexel's Class, for some reason, got canceled. Should have lasted 10 years as far as I'm concerned. But
who was the girl in that?
There was one sister who was like the hot older sister.
Not
and
Julie
there was
Lauren
one who was
Adam,
like
Susan
the
Joey.
Snarkier younger sister.
Yeah, we'll
Brittany Murphy might have been in that.
Could have been.
I think
it's
the younger one.
Could have been.
I'll never tell.
Either way, this Fox Fall Thursday, they had to rejigger it. They had to rebuild it. And what a better way to fill the hole that Drexel's Class left other than fucking putting a show called Martin after The Simpsons, Matt.
Martin
Lawrence starring vehicle.
Martin.
And we're not doing any fucking pandering to
Brittany
the
Murphy
community, like fucking Family Matters. This is a straight up show for black people. And if there's anything I liked when I was an 11-year-old white boy, it was shows for black people.
Yeah.
Like
your
some
hood
in Living Color, some fucking Martin. All this stuff was right in my
color,
wheelhouse, man. Shanaynay. Yeah. That little short kid with, like, the boogers in his nose. He had Martin playing multiple characters every fucking show.
Fucking Rufus, the security guard.
Yeah, Rufus, the security guard. Good stuff. Like, people don't remember how versatile Martin Lawrence was as long as he was doing something super over the top and goofy. Martin was a huge success. But then you still got that 90210
hey,
hole to fill.
You want to tie it back into Luke Wilson?
Uh-huh.
Motherfuckers need to check out Blue Streak. Martin Short and Luke Wilson.
Ooh,
another great vehicle right there. I got the hot pizzas.
Quite the team up right there.
90210.
What they did to try and fill that 90210 hole is they spun off a character from 90210. Fucking Donna's abusive boyfriend, or his abusive rock star boyfriend, made good, apologized for being an alcoholic and slapping her.
That's nice of him.
Moved to a different town, and he started a band called The Heights.
That's cool.
The Heights lasted for less than one season, Matt.
Really?
But when it was on TV, I thought it was cool as fuck as a dog.
I didn't know you were that into it, man.
Had a bunch of just like what TV producers' ideas of cool people were in 1992. Like, it was like, I was picturing like, this is what it's like to be young and hip now. Like, me and some people in flannels and baggy pants are
I'm wearing a flannel right now.
Living in a big, like, industrial warehouse type, like, loft apartment. We're making music together.
How do I talk?
We know one black guy. We also know, like, one girl who's sort of Latina. But most of us are white.
He's the black guy from. Oh, give me a second. Yep, yeah. He's the blind cafe owner and one of my favorite Ted Danson vehicles.
Oh, Becker joint?
Becker.
Is that the same guy who was Lord Nikon in Hackers and the guy who did Throwing Blades in The Crow?
Oh, shit, I don't know now. You've gone too deep. Okay, well, you've gone too deep down the 90s. Well.
Too deep. So
too
the
many
Heights,
things to pull from.
The Heights was big because I liked it for some reason, because I was just into fucking cool people in their early 20s.
And you were also wanting to know how to talk to
also
an angel.
Also because it weirdly had a number one Billboard song that came off of it. Even though nobody watched the show, somehow everyone heard that song and loved
yeah,
that song.
Yeah, I know the shit out of that song, and I know dick all about
fucking
this show.
Song. And then I'll tell you what, there's another big thing that fucking happened when the Heights got canceled. You're talking about lineups. I used to be a strong Fox Thursday night man. Like, it's just like I'm watching their lineup all the way through. Once the Heights got canceled, they fucking plugged some bullshit in there I wasn't interested in.
And now Thursday
night.
So I
had to do a little bit of flipping around, looking
Thursday
at the different channels.
Became must-see TV.
That's when I found a show called Seinfeld, Matt, after that Heights cancellation. And this surprised me, too. I was thinking, like, when did I start watching Seinfeld? It was probably, like, mid-season 2. No, this is already mid-season 4 in 1992.
Wow.
When I first started watching, there was a lot of Seinfeld going on before I ever even got hip to it. This many years later, having seen every episode of Seinfeld about 100 times each, that's shocking to me that Seinfeld was on for so long and I was paying no attention to it.
Well, sir, you're spinning me off into my number one, and it is a hybrid, sir.
Ooh, ooh.
I had to. I know we were going straight network lineups, but
this is where the tough choices were going to be made.
Every once in a while, Nate, you didn't get the choice.
No. It's like I do a 7 to 8 on this channel, and then like I do an 8 to 9 over on this channel.
Here's the thing. You've said it again. You are a product of divorce.
Oh.
I, sir, was not.
Didn't really talk about that again.
My parents, still together, and back then...
They gotta be getting bored of each other.
There was one night they flexed their strength when they said, shut the fuck up, we're getting the TV.
Oh, wow.
They let us watch Simpsons from mm-hmm. 7 to 7:30. Mm-hmm. But after that, Wings,
oh, no.
Cheers,
oh, no.
And Seinfeld.
These are all, oh, I like Seinfeld.
I was
Wings
Seinfeld
and Cheers, man.
From season one,
these
sir.
These are boring ass
I've
old
seen
people
them all.
Shows. I did not
I watched
watch.
Everything NBC had to mm-hmm, offer, mm-hmm. man. And shortly after this, Simpsons got booted to Sunday nights or whatever
yeah,
the fuck
uh-huh.
it landed on. I feel like they
and
did
then
like
NBC
a Tuesday
just
for a little bit.
Took over Thursdays.
And then
like,
Friends
we
got in there.
Fucking Thursdays, and all of it. Motherfucker.
I've seen every episode of Wings. I've seen so many episodes of Cheers.
I've seen maybe like a quarter of 3 episodes of Wings.
Oh, no, man. I've seen like the entire series run of Wings.
I've tried to get into Cheers so many times because it feels like something
yeah.
I should have liked, but I was just too young to understand it.
I've seen...
But it doesn't work. I hate Cheers.
Billion fucking episodes of Cheers. Seinfeld saw all of them because my old man was about it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, it's fucking 8:30. Like, you don't get a choice anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what we're watching. And I'm going to tell you right now. Saw a lot of episodes of L.A. Law,
ooh.
Even bleeding into that
ooh.
9 to 10 category.
Yeah, definitely never seen
and
any
then
LA
years
Law.
Later, all at ER because it was just,
like,
you left it on,
you
man.
You seemed like you were living in a household where the parents were like flexing their muscles a little bit more and like watch TV. Whereas
on Thursday night, they did.
In my house, I feel like, God, I can't. I think we probably had like 2 TVs is the deal, and they could watch something in one room and I could watch in the other, but it might have just been that it was just full on like I was in control of the TV. Like this, like you go do whatever. I watch the TV, and then you don't have to like raise me
yeah.
as a son because the
it was
TV's
a trade-off.
Doing that.
It, was
it might
a trade-off.
Have been a trade-off. Yeah.
Yeah. For us,
probably a little bit of both. Probably like a little bit of both those things.
On those other nights, like
I can tell you right now though, there was never a moment where I ever sat down with my parents and watched a television show with them.
Thursday
that
night.
Is not a thing that would happen.
Thursday night was it because uh-uh. it was like, well, fuck it. We're going to watch TV or do homework. And mm-hmm. I wasn't fucking doing homework.
Homework.
So I'm watching TV. So Thursday nights, I had to watch what they watch. And like I said, it was a trade-off. It was Simpsons, mm-hmm, 7 mm-hmm. to 7:30, and then must-see NBC.
I wonder what was in that 7 o'clock spot on
Cheers.
NBC that you were mixing. They did 2 Cheers a night?
Yeah, it was Cheers, Wings,
yeah.
Cheers.
Okay, wow.
And there was a couple nights.
Pretty hard on that Cheers thing.
But I can remember those Thursday night Simpsons because I can remember just being deathly
mm-hmm,
ill, had
mm-hmm.
the flu real bad.
Yeah.
And it was the night that they premiered Bart Simpson's hit music video, Deep, Deep Trouble.
Bart! stars. Let's move right along. You can all sing along at the sound of the gong. Once upon a time, about a week ago, all of a sudden trouble started to grow. Alarm was buzzing, I was snoozing. Supposed to get up now, but I was refusing to let reality become an intrusion. Cause in dreamy dreamland, I was cruising. But the buzz kept buzzing, my head kept buzzing. Gave the radio a throw and heard an explosion. Opened up my eyes to my surprise. There stood Homer and his temperature rise. I was chilling, he was yelling. Face all distorted cause he was propelling. I said, I'm real sorry, but that didn't cut it. I started to protest, but Dad said,
shut it, get up, mow the lawn, move it on the double. Cause if you don't, you're in deep, deep trouble.
Not to be confused with the Bartman.
Not the Bartman.
The follow-up, deep, deep trouble. And I was sick, had the flu real bad, and my mom made beef stew that night.
Mm.
And then
a hearty meal.
Bart's singing, and he's like, and mom got upset because I put mothballs in the beef stew. And I was like, there's beef stew behind me right now, Bart. Ooh. And I can remember specifically puking during the debut of Bart Simpson's Deep Trouble.
Think about beef stew without thinking about you puking on Bart Simpson.
And hey, I love beef stew nowadays.
Well, good. It wasn't a lifelong trauma that happened.
Real quick, couple things my parents also made me watch.
Oh, no.
Evening Shade.
I'm not certain what that is.
Burt Reynolds and a couple other old people on CBS.
Not so bad. Not so bad.
No
CBS in my routine. I can't think of a single thing I watched on CBS in the 90s.
Saturday Nights, Golden Girls,
mm-hmm.
and Empty Nest.
Empty Nest.
I watched a lot of Empty Nest.
I watched a lot of Empty Nest as well. It was paired up next to the Torkelsons for a while,
it was.
I remember.
Life goes on.
Saturday night.
And so do we.
Probably the worst night for television. Also the night that I was visiting my dad because I was a child of divorce.
He had cable?
He lived in a different town away from everybody, so I was just stuck watching TV there.
Yeah.
So like...
Did he have cable?
I think that's the one time I was watching TV with parents because he didn't have a 2 TV setup until a little bit later. And once that happened, I would just watch MTV in the basement.
Yeah.
But until then, I remember getting stuck watching a lot of... Torkelson's was there for a while. Empty Nest, there was a show called Nurses that was
packaged
with them
for a little
bit. Yep, that
was on after Empty Nest. That was in the 8:30 category. Had to watch a lot of that, too.
I just blind... Like, a lot of the times, too, we'd, like, rent a VHS. That's what we'd do when I was, like, we'd go see a movie at the theater, and we'd go back to his house, probably rent a VHS on the way, and we'd watch a movie then, too. But, like, also, it ended up a lot of times just watching fucking gross Saturday night NBC, which not a fan of.
I can remember watching Hoosier Lottery.
Oh, yeah. I watched a lot of Hoosier Lottery.
And we lived in Illinois, Nate.
Figure out what those picks are,
We
man.
Lived in Illinois, Nate.
Not me. We had tickets in hand. We were shaking them. Oh, man, so close.
You're a little more invested than me, sir. Give me a number one, son of a gun. You got it,
Nate. As
we're
looking back here, I'm realizing the only things I watched as a kid were Fox and ABC. No CBS.
Wow.
Was forced to watch NBC on Saturdays sometimes. Maybe like... what was that, like Blossom Night, an NBC night on a Monday?
Don't be nobody cable. Somebody hell on hell.
Maybe every once in a while I stumbled into that Monday night block of programming.
Someone's gonna surely
on NBC.
Shine.
But other than that, I was a straight fucking ABC Fox ticket man. My number one, I'm going with your number two. It's a classic. You can't beat it. That TGIF lineup on Fridays.
Yeah.
But you picked your favorite of the rotating four, which was when they'd stick Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
Which is legitimately the best.
I was a huge Perfect Strangers guy.
But I'm encompassing the whole one. I'm just saying, even with that fourth rotating where they kept putting failed new shows in there, I think the three before them.
The Mr. Coopers of the world.
The Family Matters, the Step by Step, and the Dinosaurs were strong enough to where it doesn't matter what that fourth one is. But I'd like to go through a list of all of the shows they tried in that fourth spot in 1992.
This is clutch. This is clutch. Just because my Thursday one was a big deal, because like I said, I know I kind of cheated and I made an amalgamation.
A little half and half.
Oh, it was a quarter and three quarter, but either way, but it was the dawn of that NBC must see TV. It was what was going to be, but this right here, this is TV history.
Oh,
put them all in there because we all watched them. We all watched them. We watched them all. There's no wrong
beginning
lineup
of the
here.
Year, that fourth spot after Dinosaurs was a show called Baby Talk.
Oh!
A ripoff of Look Who's Talking.
Where that baby could talk.
Made by the same producers of Look Who's Talking.
Yeah.
Where the baby was voiced by Tony Danza, Matt. You didn't get any Travolta in this one, but you got some fucking Tony Danza. Also, George Clooney, pre-ER, on that show.
CBS did a show years later with a baby that could talk, but it was just the fat guy from the Arby's commercials. It was like, I kind of talk like this. I'm kind of from Chicago.
That's something I'm going to bing. I don't remember a fat guy from Arby's commercials, but when I think about it, I'm kind of thinking about the guy who was on Herman's Head as one of the things in the head.
I do believe that's the same guy.
That's sort of coming to me.
Yes.
Baby Talk didn't last very long, so they had to come up with something else to try to stick in here. So after that, they did a Head of the Class spinoff, Billy. This is where Billy Connolly's character moved to Berkeley, California.
Which one was Billy?
I don't even fucking know.
I know Arvard and Dennis.
He moves to Berkeley, and he marries a single mother in order to try and get a green card.
I like this show.
And the whole show is apparently him dealing with California people
and
while immigration
foreigners.
Comes after him to try and kick him out of the country. And he has to try and prove to them that his sham marriage to this single mother is real.
He's the foreigner or she's the foreigner?
He's the foreigner. Oh. Billy Connolly. Sounds like an Irish fella.
I don't remember Billy.
That didn't last very long either. So eventually they tried to slot in a show called Camp Wilder.
Yes.
Camp Wilder starred some chick named Mary Page Keller.
Uh-huh.
She's like an older woman in her 20s.
Sure.
Her parents die.
Old in her 20s.
So then she has to raise her younger siblings, and like her younger siblings' friends are coming around all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So like the house becomes a hangout of
sorts.
You
don't want them there.
Couple of people
They're trouble.
Showed up on this show that weren't famous at the time, but eventually became famous. We got a Jerry O'Connell was on this thing.
Oh, yeah. Was he fat?
Probably still pretty chubby at this point. Not yet the late 90s hunk. Tina Margarino got her start being on Camp Wilder for a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Jay Moore was on the Camp Wilder. Everyone loves him. Hilary Swank showed up.
Oh, yeah. I recall this show.
And not to be outdone, everyone's favorite Joker, Jared Leto, was on Camp Wilder for a little bit.
Was he?
This, at the time, was a star-studded show.
Yeah.
But...
big cast.
For some reason, did not catch on. So there was another show. They had to plug in to this fourth slot and give it a whirl.
Who's the Boss Part 2?
Where I Live, starring Dougie Doug.
Oh,
little consulting producer, Bill Cosby, in here. Well, I'm the Cosby. I'm gonna try to make Dougie Doug a new superstar.
Where I Live,
Got a little bit of just, it was just a young guy played by Dougie Doug of, you know, fucking Jamaican bobsled fame.
Dougie Doug or Dougie Fresh?
Just
hanging
Dougie
out. Doug,
yeah. Dougie Doug, just hanging out with his friends.
Yeah.
This was not the last show they tried in this time slot. We've got one more.
I specifically remember Where I Live, though, because I was a big Dougie Doug guy.
I kind of liked him, too.
Yeah.
One I don't remember, this last
one
on my list.
I can remember digging that out.
Home Free, starring
that?
Matthew Perry. Matthew Perry plays a freelance journalist who still lives at home with his mom and is sort of in a state of arrested development, which he very much enjoys, until his older sister's marriage dissolves, and then she also moves back in with his mom and brings her kids along, and he has to learn how to be responsible, Matt.
What a cunt.
I have no memories of that. It sounds terrible. But either way, all those shows rotating in, along with Step by Step and Dinosaurs. And, that's my number one pick. You can't beat especially Family Matters anchored fucking TGIF.
Yeah.
TGIF is going to show you how it's done, man.
Y'all, I feel like y'all forgot how strong Family Matters was.
I feel like every single family in the world got Little Caesars and watched TGIF on Fridays.
Thank you.
Like, that's... just
absolutely.
What happened on Friday?
Yeah,
fucking
of
nights.
Course we're getting fucking crazy bread.
Oh,
like,
hell yeah.
Come on, it's happening.
We only get that once a month.
Ted's punching that fucking chandelier and breaking the light bulb. Dave, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's all going to be there. Oh, God. There was like, you know, Sunday nights. I know I was watching fucking America's Funniest Home Videos.
There was a lot of
just
that.
Just watching Bob Saget.
They shuffled that around.
Go through
sometimes
a divorce.
They'd play it once. Sometimes they'd play it two times. Sometimes they'd try a show and it'd fail. And then they'd be like, oh, just double up on America's Funniest Home Videos again.
Folks, I'm going to let you in on a little TV nugget, just absolute amazingness. So, fucking America's Funniest Home Videos.
That's right.
Saget's doing Full House, and he's doing America's Funniest Home Videos. He's burning the candle at both ends.
Oh. Around, up on this table.
Around season,
the table doesn't collapse and I don't fall on the ground.
Yeah.
No.
Around season 4 or 5, starts having troubles at home. Starts going through a divorce.
Real life bleeding into my TV time.
And you start watching America's Funniest Home Videos. We always did the "Honey, I'm coming home, have dinner ready" at the end of the show.
He was a sad man on my TV.
You start to watch some of the jokes on America's Funniest Home Videos. And then, like, it's the end of the episode, and he's like, "Honey, I'm coming home. Make sure nobody's there." Yeah. "Hey, guy that's fucking my wife, please leave."
He was doing a lot of drugs at that time.
Oh, go back. Catch some of those episodes. It's going to be a treat for
you. Like, I wasn't going to do that anyways. That's how I spent most of my afternoons.
Hell yeah. Where are we at next week? Speaking
next
of
week,
hit television shows.
Going back down south for WCW Southern Wrestling.
We got some stunning Steve Austin
April
coming our
25th,
way.
April 25th, 1992. 2 out of 3 falls. Barry Windham, stunning Steve Austin. Fucking get ready for it, motherfucker.
That's going to be a scorcher. Just remember, stay stingle? Stingle? We're going to WCW. Or so stay stingle.
Stinger. Ow!
Ow!
No. Stay single on Baby Oil and Blow.
Stay single, Rossi.